a second. All right, here we go. This is Art Town, and I'm your host, Justin Baker. And folks, did you hear that? That was some powerful, powerful music. That was by a band called The Wet Specimens. And my guest this month is the singer of The Wet Specimens, Colin Social, or as I knew him as a student, he was my student, Colin Beatore. This little outfit he has, this group is making some pretty incredible music, and it just grabbed me. So this month I was thinking, well, you know, I mentioned it to him in the past. Why don't you, I have you on as a guest. And it just worked out. And what really interests me about what he's doing is that it's a fully realized thing. Meaning like every little bit of it seems considered, from the packaging to the merchant. You know, it's like this all kind of encompassing thing where there's this, it seems to be, to me at least, this real question of like, where does art and life begin and end? And with this, it seems like it's all this one vision. And that really got me excited. And I dove pretty deep on the record that he gave me to listen to. And I just loved it. And I thought, well, this has me even more excited about what he's doing. So I wanted to talk to him, and I made it happen. And we had a fun time. And interestingly enough, I felt like there was some similarities in the way we saw things. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Because I don't know, I always feel like a wuss. But yeah, Colin doesn't seem like that, but I do. But, you know, maybe there's a middle ground between him and I. So, and there was, and it was funny. So I'm going to keep it short. It was an honor and a privilege, and it was exciting. And here is Colin Social.
Guys would pull over and threaten to kick my ass because I had pink hair, and it's like, dude, I'm a teenager.
yeah. I remember that a little bit, but yeah, okay. Well, first off, so like, thanks for having me. You know, this is really fun. I don't talk to. I was thinking about it too today. I was like, I should talk to more music people because, like, well, the idea of Art Town is like, it's this really rich, like, creative area that we live in, I find. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it doesn't get a lot of, I don't want to say exposure because it does, but it doesn't get a lot of like journalistic effort in it of like yeah. talking to people, like finding out what's going on. Always the music more than the fine art, like, or the visual arts, I should say. But like, you know, there isn't a lot of like arts journalism in the area. So like, I like to talk to like anybody who I kind of find is like doing something interesting or part of something interesting. You kind of fall into both of those categories.
Right on.
So, what was my point? Oh, yeah, because I was talking to, like, a while ago, this artist, Michael Oatman, and he was saying, like, oh, you know, there's so many great, you know, visual artists in the area that, you know, people don't realize. But on the way over, I was like, my God, there's been a million, like, great bands coming out of this region. You know, maybe not a million, but there's been a lot.
It's a powder keg of a creative place yeah. just in general. Like, there's, I mean, we're standing in the shadow of New York City, so it's yeah. hard for, but if like without New York City, Albany, Troy, Schenectady area would probably be like a force, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And I was thinking way back to like when Blotto was oh, yeah. doing their thing. And
Cheese, the bassist, was my dad's best friend.
Oh, no kidding.
I used to have his first bass that my grandma drove him to buy, and it got stolen out of a practice space.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Wow, he was your dad's... Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
well, there's a weird connection.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember my dad actually was like when he was on his way to work, Cheese died like in his truck.
Oh, wow.
Because he was a heavy drinker. Mm. I guess his liver just gave out. He saw his truck like sitting in a parking lot, and he was like, maybe I'll go and see, you mm-hmm. know. And he's like, nah, I gotta get to work. And he found out later that Cheese was dead in the truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But he was a great guy. He was awesome. Always so nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody else I've met from Blotto has always been super cool, too.
Yeah.
Well, they got their start in my dad's bar that he had.
Oh, wow.
He only had a bar for a couple of years. He parted it away, much like what I would do if I was, you know.
Right, right.
He was, like, in his mid-20s, and he, like, got out of the National Guard and was like, uh-huh. I'm gonna open a bar. And, yeah, Blotto ended up playing some of their first shows there.
Oh, that's crazy. Wow, that's funny. Yeah, it's a while back now, my God. But I did a project with Sarge Blotto.
Oh, cool.
And
he passed recently too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Super super sad. And we were in a puppet show together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
I was doing the puppeteering of I forget, it was a writer. And he was doing the voice of the other puppet, who was Picasso. And it was just like...
This is awesome. Yeah, is there any like recording of this?
I think there is. I think later when I get home, I can send you some images of the puppets.
Perfect.
And stuff.
But I would love to.
It was very cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, so what you were saying before, you grew up in Boston Spa and you had pink hair. And weren't enjoying it, but what brought you to like that point of like, so how you were like 15, like how did you find the things that you were into? Or what year is this actually?
That was, I was 14. Fuck, I don't remember. 14, 15.
Early 90s?
No, this was like late 90s probably.
Okay, late 90s.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
38 now, so it was late 90s. Okay. I could actually like...
So we're like 10 years apart. Okay.
Or I'm 85 was when I was born.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I could actually like plot on a timeline easy enough what age I was at certain things, because 1991, I went into first grade, 92, second grade, mm-hmm. and it went all the way up to like the 2000s, which...
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what got me there was Nirvana, actually. When Nevermind came out before school, I saw the video for Smells Like Teen Spirit, and I was completely entranced. I was like, what is this? This is so fucking pissed off.
Yeah,
this is awesome. This is great.
Yeah.
And it went down, you know, the path from there where 93 Dookie came out, and that was a big thing for me. Then I delved deeper into their catalog and found their older stuff that I ended up liking more.
So you're pretty young doing this, though.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, I've been into punk since I was, first grade. Of course, I had a Criss Cross CD at the same time.
right.
So I'm not absolved of all sin. Yeah. I mean, the late 90s, I got into nu metal an unfortunate amount, but just because that was like the heaviest thing that was accessible, I think.
Yeah.
And once I started hearing, you know, more hardcore and punk stuff, I was like, oh, fuck that. Never mind. This stuff is kind of lame. I don't know why it's making a comeback either. I don't get it.
It is making a comeback?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, kids at shows I'll see wearing, like, Korn shirts and stuff. Like,
oh, weird.
Don't do that.
Oh, yeah, stop.
For your own sake.
Yeah, stop it. Okay. That never grabbed me. I was always like, oof, it just didn't sound right. But, nothing against you.
No, I mean, I was
old enough. I had already kind of formed a base of like, okay, this is kind of where
you had the perspective to be like, oh, this is a corny cash grab.
right. Yeah. So you were always into it, but what drew you in first? Was it just you saw Nirvana and then Dookie, and then you went back.
Yeah, well, 95, Out Come the Wolves came out by Rancid.
Okay.
That really helped cement it. And things like, I used to get like Hit Parader magazine when I was a kid, and I'd see like the Sex Pistols, and the name just like skeeved me out. And I was like, well, I got to know more.
Yeah, yeah.
Much like my fascination with like horror related shit.
It's
the things that make me uncomfortable are the ones I'm kind of drawn to. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got to know. And, I was like, Sex Pistols, yeah, this is fucking great. I was like, the Ramones, these guys look like a bunch of assholes. What the hell? And listen to it, it's like, yeah, this is, I didn't really appreciate them until like my adult life. But I mean, as a kid, I was like, yeah, this is awesome too. And just kind of kept going from there. I mean, those were the days, as you remember, where if you wanted to hear more of that kind of shit, you'd have to like read the liner notes and be
Oh,
they're thanking these bands. Let me see if I could find something by them. And the hunt was like a thrilling thing because you couldn't just go into any regular, you know, like CD store. Like, I don't even remember any of the names, like Strawberries or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just find it. So you had to like find people who knew it. And Saratoga had a pretty rich street punk scene. And I started befriending some of those guys, and they would give me like mixtapes of these bands. I could only speculate of who they were, because at the time I didn't know who they were, and I don't, ever since, I haven't heard a lot of it. Mm-hmm. But it got me into cooler shit as I went. Like this Belgian band, The Kids, was a big one. There's a mixtape with The Kids on it.
Huh.
I'm trying to think. Forgotten Rebels, I was just telling you about earlier.
Yeah.
They were on one of the mixes. A lot of shit like The Casualties and The Virus, which were more accessible. I mean, that was when they were kind of getting their start as a street punk movement, really, I guess, was like 96 onwards. And I was getting into it 98, 99 or so. It just kind of snowballed, really.
Right. Do you think you were drawn to like because I can remember, like, and I talk to my students sometimes about like growing up, like pre-internet and like, I don't know, just like pre like immediate community. You know, I think like there's a thing now where like you can easily find people who are into things that you're into
immediately.
And like back then it was kind of like you were saying, you had to hunt and search more for it. But I'm kind of losing my train of thought. But like, I was just thinking like the appeal of the angry music, where you felt in some way, because I did, like I was kind of pissed off about where I was and what I was doing, and or not what I was doing, but like growing up in a small town, I was really in like everything was so like I wasn't a jock, or I wasn't like a nerd, you know. I was like, oh, I was probably a nerd. but like, you know, I
you just didn't quite fit in with that
either. I didn't
either.
Fit in really anywhere. And I found like that kind of pissed me off.
That was a big part of it too. Now at like, you know, fucking 20 something years into being involved in punk, I understand that community is a huge part of it. But as a kid, it was just like listening to it. It's like, this is articulating the things that I didn't have words for before.
Right.
Understands what I was mad about. And it's like, here you go. Here's an explanation about the confusing shit that's in your brain.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the feel of it too, I would imagine of like,
It was the aggression, the intensity that brought me in. But then like lyrically, it really started lining up for me where I was like, I mean, a lot of my political ideology came from punk bands, but that was already stuff that I kind of felt. And then I started like reading it, and it's like, well, if you feel this way, then you should understand that this is part of the issue. Why it was, I mean, this band Conflict was, in Crass, as I was saying before, were both like instrumental in me going hard left. They were more militant. Well, except for Crass, they were a pacifist band, but a lot of the 80s anarcho stuff was like, in direct opposition to the hippies of the like, give love a chance. It's like, no, we tried that. Fuck you. We're going to throw this brick and see what happens.
Right. Yeah. So like as the young Colin is coming up through all this, is there a lot of like pushback at school, or is it like, are people like, you know, worried, or are they just like, oh, he's doing his thing, or was it just, or did you just kind of go under the radar? You know, like, oh, there's that kid that's like.
Well, I went to a Catholic school originally.
Okay.
Just because it was like a smaller class. My parents aren't religious really. And my mom's like Italian Catholic, only on holidays. My dad, he's never said anything. I'm pretty sure he's atheist, but either way. It was just more like, it's a small class. Like, you know, maybe it'll be better for him to learn in that atmosphere. And, I hated it. I didn't like it. Lyrically, the religious trauma was in the Bed of Nails song too, where it's like children are being held up to this impossible standard of this like omnipotent being. And if you can't be like this person who knows all, sees all, does all, then you're just going to be tortured for an eternity. Sorry. You know, I mean, in like Catholicism and Christianity, like that whole branch is really the only like vengeance based religion. Like that, you know?
Right, yeah.
Especially, I have an acquaintance who's like a minister in the Satanic Temple who actually taught me a lot about how the narrative surrounding Judaism is completely incorrect, where it's like, you know, people talk about it like it's unrealized Christianity when it's like there's two entirely different messages being taught. Like, when I forget one of the examples, he said something to the effect of God told Abraham to kill his son, and in Christianity he's like, well, you're supposed to do what I said. In Judaism it's like you were supposed to learn to question shit like that.
Right yeah I heard it summed up best like once, like where Christianity's like, yes, I'm sorry, and Judaism is like, what do you want? What now?
You know? That's awesome.
It's like this, what you're saying, like, you know, Judaism is full of questions. It's all about questions.
Right? Yeah, it seems like it's largely like interpretation, like how, an understanding that this is, religion is primarily philosophy, with some spirituality, whereas Christianity is like, no, there's an actual fucking talking snake, and he fucked you all, him and all the women.
So is that like going to a Catholic school, that the confines of that, is that the beginning of like wanting to just break out of this mold? And
I think so. It was certainly a catalyst because I was...
It sounds like you were in somewhat a little bit traumatized by the experience in some way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I say this because I felt like when I was a kid, I remember vividly in first grade... I didn't go to a Catholic school or anything, but we went to church often. And that idea of not being good enough and going to hell terrified me.
It's it's one of the worst things you could like, and you're gonna put that on a fucking child. That's right. Like kind of predatory, and it's right. Weird.
Yeah.
But then they're gonna be like, "But God is love." But if he doesn't love you enough,
right, right,
then 1,000 lifetimes you'll suffer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I remember having like a panic attack in first grade, being
like similar experience. Yeah.
And I was like doing something. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm misbehaving," and I was like, "I'm gonna go to hell."
Yeah.
And I almost started crying, and like I just had to like I think I hid in the bathroom, but yeah, so I can see where, like, having that full on, you know, for over how many years would be pretty... Yeah,
up to sixth grade.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why I really gravitate to a lot of the religious imageries that, I mean, I love the mythology of it.
Right, yeah, the story of it.
It's endlessly fascinating.
Yeah.
There's so much weird and dark and bizarre shit, but, I mean, to... The degree of, I mean, having nuns like be like, "Do you want to go to hell?" Like when you're misbehaving, it's like right. It's fucked.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, were there nuns in your school?
A couple, yeah. Oh, wow. Not okay. Many. They didn't do the whole penguin suit or anything.
They didn't. Okay.
No, they were just regular,
yeah.
You know, old yeah. Ladies with names like Sister Tony Ann and Sister Mary Catherine and
yeah.
I mean, some of them were sweet, but for the yeah. Most part, they were terrifying people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know that some of them were like, "In the old days, we used to be able to beat you."
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
The cool things. Like, that's admitting, like, I would just fuck all you kids up right now if I could.
So when do you get the idea of, like, I want to do that. I want to do a band. I want to have my own. Like, so now I'm like, you're devouring it and you're like, "Okay, let me do this too."
I mean, ever since I heard Nirvana, I was like, "That's it. I want to be in a band. Like, this
really?
Is it." Yeah, wow. It was the first. I mean, I got a little plastic guitar. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't really start learning until I was like seventh grade or so. But what really cemented it for me was when I first started going to like DIY punk shows and seeing the bands that I'd only heard on mixtapes before, mm-hmm. and seeing the like camaraderie, the people, you know, singing together, all and the members of the band just walking around the crowd because they're just fucking people, like everything right. about it. Yeah. I was like, "This is exactly what I want." Like,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I don't want to be a fucking rock star. That's just, you know, that sucks. Who cares?
Right.
You know, yeah. People prying into your shit, looking up to you, or assigning a personality to you without even knowing you, you know, versus mm-hmm. like in a punk band, it's like everybody's on the same level.
Right, right.
We're all just here and having a cathartic moment and
yeah.
going nuts, whatever, jumping off shit.
So were you, because I know this a little bit, were you going to the shows at the pool hall where in Saratoga, or where were they happening?
No, I was a little too young for the Backstreet Billiards gigs.
Yeah.
I came right after that, basically.
Okay.
I mean, I was like, you know, 15 or so when those were happening, so I probably could have gone, but my parents weren't about to just drop me off at some, you know, dive.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I also just didn't really have the exposure like until I started meeting more punks in the area.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, Backstreet Billiards, right before Putnam Den opened, reopened for like a couple of years and did some shows there, and that was cool. But yeah, I missed a lot of that. There was this band, A Global Threat, who ended up being big in the street punk community, I'm sure there was embellishment there, but this older punk dude was like, "Yeah, they used to come and play like every other week. It was awesome because they were just out of Maine."
Yeah.
And now that's like a legendary band, you know?
Global
like,
Threat.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're actually, now the singer and I actually started correspondence with him, for some reason or the other recently. And he's still putting out music by himself. He does all the instruments and everything.
Oh, that's amazing. Interesting. And
he actually just put out I'll show you after a LP for that's like a Palestine benefit LP.
Oh, cool.
That's like the art is beautiful. The package and everything. And all the proceeds are going to, ANERA. I forget what that stands for. It's something to help like, Palestinian refugees and things like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Huh. So, what's the first, like leading up to the Wet Specimens, like this current record you have out, like what's the, like, What are like the first like real band you get going that you're like, okay, this is a thing that's like you're learning how to put it together?
First band I ever played a show with was called The Prosthetics. And we played at the Bite This Cyber Cafe in Amsterdam.
Nice.
I drank a bottle of cough medicine.
Oh my
of
God.
Course. Yeah, I was yeah. like 16, you know?
Yeah. And you're on guitar?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, this is awesome. This is like, I'm on the way back just from Amsterdam. I'm like, there's so much to see that I haven't seen, and I could like play music to see it. Like, that's incredible. That's it for me. We only played like four or five shows. We were a high school band. But that like just gave me the itch for it, really.
And were you able to corral kids from the school you were in, the high school you were in?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a wave when I first started getting into punk. I started like spreading it out to all my friends,
right.
And they all briefly
You're dealing
were punks.
Now. Yeah.
Like, okay, Colin will give you a mix CD, you know? A lot of them ended up like going punk for a few years and then dropping out. But I mean, it helped me to have enough of like a friend group for me to start going to shows with them and then meet the people that ended up becoming lifelong friends with.
Yeah. So that crew, that was like, okay, like I want to keep doing this. And so you get that going, that doesn't quite work. But then is like the Neutron Rats, is that the first like band where you're like touring, putting out, recording?
Kind of. So I was at this punk fest in New York City called Viva La Punk, which was at CBGB's. It was like a 3-day weekend thing. It was a great fest. But I ended up bumping into this dude from Saratoga who I knew, and he was like, hey, do you play drums? And I was like, no. And he's like, do you wanna?
Okay.
Like, sure.
Right. I remember you played drums as well.
Yeah. That was, I didn't play drums until I tried out for them, and they were like, that works. And it was, it was called the Sleaze for a while. And it ended up changing to Skag Rotter after one of the members quit, but we did some out of town stuff. We recorded twice. We were also drunk that we didn't really harness our capabilities.
Right, you didn't reach your full potential.
Yeah. And they're catchy songs, great songs. Pat, the singer, wrote pretty much all of them. The guitarist, Mike, who passed a couple of years ago, he contributed a lot of riffs and stuff, and I was like, yeah, I'll just bang on shit to this. And it ended up going pretty well for a while, except for, you know, us just being a mess in general.
Right.
But That was like the first band that I really did anything with. Like we only went out to like Rochester and Syracuse, and like we played in Western Massachusetts and stuff. But Neutron Rats ended up coming after that years later with the bassist of Skag Rotter, who's a good friend of mine. And we were like, we should just start playing again. And we had the drive. We were, you know, not partying all the time like we used to.
A little wiser.
Yeah, wisdom certainly helped.
Yeah.
And we ended up getting this guy, Dan, who is in Wet Specimens now. He played in a few local punk bands, Anal Warhead, out of commission. And we were just like, this guy's cool and he can play. Let's see what he's doing. And then we toured coast to coast. We did like 7 countries in Europe at one point. Well, that was with a stand-in basis because Brendan had kids and everything at that point. But
you put out a cassette, right? With that?
With the we did a lot of cassettes.
We did.
If I had to say, we did a demo. We did a split. We did a European cassette or a UK. The label put out our like 7-inch discography on cassette. We did a tour tape that ended up going on to be our second 7-inch, Bomb Worship. I don't know. I lose track sometimes.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
We put a, the records are the big ones. So it's like we did 2 7-inches in the LP. So I don't know if I have one of those here. I might be able to give you one of those too.
Oh, that'd be great.
I think I might have at least one left. I do.
Look at this.
Oh, and 7-inch. There you go.
Oh, nice. Oh my God. This is great. Oh my God. That's an amazing cover as well.
Yeah, that's this local artist, James. He doesn't really do as much art as he used to. He has to kind of be coaxed into it.
Okay.
He sounds like he's kind of a little critical of himself, which I don't know why, because he's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at that poster, that's the cover of the Feral Dogs record. He did that too.
Okay.
And he's an incredible artist. So we just knew that we basically knew this record was our last record when we were putting it out. So we wanted him to do it.
Okay. Huh. You knew it was your last just because of the dynamics with the bass player. And
yeah. After we recorded it and everything, I got the layout already, and mm-hmm. like we started working on that. He was like, "Yeah, after this, I'm done, guys. Sorry." And so I kind of, you know.
Oh, and you're playing guitar in this too.
Yeah, guitar and vocals. Okay. Me and the drummer wrote most of that, just because he was so busy with family stuff at that point. That was hard to get him wrangled for anything but shows, which I get, you know, his heart wasn't in it anymore.
Now, why with Wet Specimens, why aren't you doing any guitar stuff?
I wanted to be able to focus more on, like, writing around a riff kind of sucks because then you're, you know, the riff suffers, the vocals suffer because you have to be able to, like, worry about playing and singing at the same time. Yeah. Just doing vocals made it, I was curious about it because I was like, I could probably, you know, make my writing better in the process, mm-hmm. which I think it helped. And yeah, those dudes were already jamming. Dan, the drummer of Neutron Rats, this dude Cannonball and Eric, mm-hmm. they were already playing. And Dan was like, hey, we got this thing going on if you want to check it out. And I came and I was like, yeah, this is pretty much what I was looking for. Like a spooky hardcore punk band. Yeah, absolutely. That's everything I like.
Spooky. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. So let's get into this last record, which I've been listening to a lot. And I listened to probably 2 or 3 times through the new stuff. But then I went back and I listened to that 7-inch that you gave me. Split with Carnage.
Cartridge. Yeah.
And so that was like 2000. And is that the first thing you guys recorded?
No, we did like a self-recorded demo that's pretty rough, but we did the Haunted Flesh 7-inch and we did Serpent Circle in the same session.
Okay.
We recorded for some reason because we were fucking maniacs. We were just like, we'll rip through like 10 songs in a single session, see how it goes. And we ended up splitting it over 2 releases. So those were like sonically pretty similar. They're us more finding our footing. Whereas like the cartridge split, we started kind of getting more into like the understanding of like where we are musically and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's different. It does sound different to me than the Wet, than the Over Pale Bodies.
That was recorded with Jason, who was in Cartridge. That was a big part of it. It was just a different
But even engineer. Like your delivery is different.
Okay.
I feel like.
Yeah, probably. I was still learning at that point, too. Those were kind of early songs.
It's bigger. Like on Over Pale Bodies, like it's more, like, it's kind of hard to phrase it. It's expansive. You know, there's like a real, where like in that split, I was like, oh, there's like, I felt like in some way, like you haven't found your phrasing yet, or it just felt like, cause when I listened to this newest one, it's like, oh yeah, this is like, this is great. This is amazing. You know?
Well, thank you.
But like the thing that caught me about it, and maybe you can shed some light on it, is that, one, that band the Wet Specimens, the three-piece is powerful. Like, those guys are doing, like, it's not silly stuff.
Yeah.
It's really...
They're all very, very talented.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about that, though. That's why I was laughing. The recording session, we went to hang out at the Cartridge Guy's house in Boston just the night before, and then we were going to record during the day. And, of course, everybody was up until fucking 4 in the morning partying.
Right.
And the last song on that, Locked in a Basement, which I think is, like, the best song on that split that we did, is it took... I'm not exaggerating, 27 takes.
Oh my God. Wow.
And it was Jason, the dude who was recording, it was like, want to see me get three guys to try and kill me at the same time or something like that. I was like, yeah, absolutely. And he went in and he's like, so are you guys going to do it right this time or what?
Oh my God.
The look on their faces, it was so fucking funny. But eventually it came out good and everything. Yeah, those songs were... A big part of it was we were still learning after Haunted Flesh where we were going.
Mm-hmm.
Because Haunted Flesh was like our first big thing that we did. And I honestly kind of like it a little bit more than the split, at least from my point of view. Like, musically, it's great, but like, I feel like that was... I just didn't really know what to do with a lot of it. And another funny story. So the song Carved Bone Mask on there is about... The intention was for it to be about, you know, the mask persona that you put on eventually can become yourself and you'll lose touch with who you are. You know, if you're putting on a front too much, you know, a lot of people have something to prove and, you know,
right.
They'll lose themselves in that. Then fucking COVID hit and I have a song condemning masks.
Oh my God.
I was like, God damn it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think anybody read into it that far so far, knock on wood, but I was like, fuck, this is the worst timing for that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The anti. Yeah. Oh, there's the anti mask guy.
Yeah. I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, like, let's talk about the album a little more. So, I mean, the band is like, they sound locked in. And it's like really, I mean, it is aggressive, but it's like, it's so driving. It's like really, it's just driving. It's powerful stuff. And then you're also as powerful a vocalist, like blending with that. And it becomes this like kind of sonic assault. To me, that's very satisfying to listen to. But also, there's this touch of your... And I don't know who's doing it, but like with the samples, the sounds, is that... Are you adding that in as like flavor? Like?
Yeah, yeah. That was actually... I was already doing that with some of the old stuff. And there's this band, Death Fox, that I heard where the guy also was doing similar shit like that. And I was like, I reached out to him and I was like, hey, are you the one doing this? Or, you know, do you know who I was looking for tips or collaboration or something?
Yeah.
And his name's JP. He was immediately down. Not immediately. I sent him the recordings and he went, yeah, totally. Absolutely. So we worked with that back and forth a lot, which I think helped.
Mm-hmm.
I like sent him a lot of the samples and stuff that I made, and he contributed his own, and he helped to like blend them in, right?
So, yeah.
Because when I was doing it, it sounded like it was like resting on top of it, and I needed it to be more in the mix.
Yeah.
And he was definitely more experienced with that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the audio collage and the noise kind of stuff was always a part of, like, I wanted it to be like one... long track for each side, more or less.
Yeah, yeah. And it does feel like that, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, good.
So with the band, when you guys are like writing, that was one thing I was curious about. Like, what's that like? Like, are you coming in? So you're purposely not playing any, like, do you come in with a riff or anything, or do they kind of have the stuff and you're, do you direct them, orchestration?
It's kind of a mixed bag. I've never come up with a riff for it. The riff writing is all Cannonball and Eric. Those dudes, they have great chemistry with each other, and they're both very talented.
Who's doing what on the, what's Cannonball doing?
Cannonball's on guitar and Eric's on bass.
Okay.
And Eric is, he's he's the fucking guy when it comes to adding in things like synth and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's got always got a bigger picture in his head. So when it comes to the writing part of things, usually I'll sit in while they're working. Eric will be like, hey, I got this riff, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Me and Cannonball worked out this song. And then Dan and I will kind of put in our two cents, like, as far as like, hey, that sounds a little like too bright and cheery or something, you know, or like, this is, what if you hold this out longer, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And so it becomes like more of a collaborative effort, and it helps to like round it out a little bit more. And then after that, yeah, I'll just stew on the lyrics for a while. I take a long time because I'm obsessed over the details, but
right.
Yeah, it's usually starts with either Eric or Cannonball or both of them.
Yeah. And then it's, I forgot now what my question was, but you know, it's because it, how, this is what I'm curious. And this is like, actually like probably bad journalism, or I'm actually not a journalist, but how is it different live? That was the one thing I was thinking about, like with the recording, like your vocals are, everything, no one's like, the interesting thing about the recording, which I thought was like, nothing's on top really. You're all kind of moving to, like, there's no like, just to, I'll stick with the same band. Like, you know, with Zeppelin, it's like Jimmy Page is sometimes he's on top, you know?
Right.
And sometimes Plant's on top, you know? And it's like, no one's like really like, you know, it sounds like sometimes like four soloists.
Right.
You know? So like with you guys, it doesn't have that vibe, but I was trying to envision this as a live experience. How are the vocals presented differently in that experience?
I always tell the sound guy, I'll be like, vocals, even with everything else, it's just another instrument. Like,
yeah.
I don't want the vocals. It doesn't quite sound right. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really like that. The vocals are an instrument, and it's not the Colin show, you know?
Right, right.
I don't know why singers always want to be so fucking loud. It's like, right. No, like, blend in with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, make it,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just helps. It helps the intensity. It also makes it seem like, you know, louder when you can't necessarily play louder, because, like, otherwise the drums will be drowned out or something. So, like, right, with the vocals brought down, it helps even everything out, almost, like, compresses, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
But also just partially insecurity, too.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, I don't want to hear my voice that loud.
Yeah. We have, like, this deep guttural, like, it's... And to read the lyrics, though, which is interesting, because there is so much information in there, you know, when you're reading it, and you kind of have, at least my experience was, I had to like listen, read, and then I start to hear it all, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't grab you right away. I feel like that has to be intentional.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wanted the vocals to sound cavernous, like a hopeless, desperate, like almost like a fucking ghost in a punk band, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, part of like the lyrics, them being indecipherable, like unless you have the sheet in front of you, like that's just goes along with it. That wasn't mm-hmm. really any intent, but I wanted to, I mean, the alchemy imagery sort of thing. I got really interested in the idea of taking something that was so negative and just ugly and turning it into something that could be enjoyed, something, you know, lead to gold. And that was a big part of it, where I wanted to take the subjects like Over Pale Bodies is about reproductive rights, but word it in a way where it was almost poetic and do the subject justice, especially because that's like something I'm passionate about, is reproductive rights are essential for people. That's actually the cover of the LP was inspired by that entire.
Oh, wow.
I worked with a female artist out of Shanghai because it was important for me to work with, you know, a woman on when the album is called Over Pale Bodies, based on the reproductive rights thing. And she helped to really flush everything out. I sent her like an essay about it, more or less, you know.
Wow, that's interesting.
She was like, yeah, I got you. Like, we'll figure this out.
Okay. Wow, that's incredible. Oh, that's so interesting. I've read this a couple of times. I didn't pick up on that in there. There was other ones where I'm like, okay, he's talking about something else. Obviously, in a lot of these lyrics, I feel like, you know, you're wrestling with other ideas, political and I would think emotional. Am I right? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The very last song I finished the lyrics when I was in the mental hospital.
Oh, wow.
Which is what that last line, these walls scream together as one, the halls are sealed and there's nowhere left to run. That was, yeah, I was in a psych ward.
Wow. What happened there?
I just hit a breaking point and I was like, if I'm not put somewhere, I might be in danger, more or less.
Okay.
My best friend, he's more or less just a brother, and he's the one that's like, okay, it's time. And I go, all right, yeah. I don't want to, but yeah, okay, I'll believe you this time. And then after, I'm like, cool, thanks.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it just got dark. I mean, was it a long building thing?
Like, yeah, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, dealing with, you know, complex PTSD and like persistent depressive disorders, some major depressive episodes and stuff like that. Over time, the stressors just build and build and build. And eventually it's to a point where I'm like, just in a bad way, you know?
Yeah.
Unwashed.
Yeah,
Filthy, like, you know, my apartment looks kind of like just a trash heap, you know? And
gotcha.
So there's signs.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm trying to think of how to word it tactfully, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't know if you need to word it another way. Yeah, I mean, it makes... Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That's you know, a heavy thing.
Inspiration, at least, right?
But, it comes out as amazing art, you know?
Oh, like thanks. At least I'm like, that's why I'm like, at least this album came out cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it's... Well, I mean, also, you know, you have people around you that see those things, and it sounds like you were directed, you know, to a way that it resolved itself and you got help and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's because it's hard to see. It's the, the frog in the boiling pot metaphor.
Right.
And,
yeah.
That pot was boiling for a while. I didn't realize it.
Right.
Yeah. That was my second time in there. Mm. But, both songs were pretty similar, but like after going, it's like, this is, I mean, I didn't go to like a state run facility, not that they're particularly bad, but they usually house people who are far more intense. I went to Four Winds and I mean, that place was great. It was just nice to know like everything is on hold. I can just deal with this.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
everything out there is not a concern of mine.
Right.
Like I have to confront it head on, which is, you know, nowhere left to run. It's like, I have to fucking do this now.
Right. Yeah. Huh.
And it was, you know, massively helpful.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. It's intense, but it, you know, it shows, you know, it's like, that's the thing that's like, I think so like amazing when I hear it is just the power is, it feels very like real. And you know, there's like no, like what you were saying, like about the singer, like there's no pretension to it. It's just like, you're there, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, we all carry our weight. We're all like putting in our equal parts, you know? I never got why, especially singers of all people, do the fucking diva thing where it's like, you're not the one that's like, you know, worried about your instruments and lugging gear and shit like that.
Yeah. What, speaking of singers, I mean, who do you listen to that you feel like, I don't want to say molded after, but are inspired by or like for that particular style, like it's very specific. I could only think of a couple people. You probably know maybe a lot more, but the one thing that came to my mind a little bit, and it's not even really there, was like I was getting like a little bit of Murder City Devils vibe.
Oh, Murder City Devils, good band.
Yeah, but I don't even know if that makes sense or...
That actually, that might be an influence that I hadn't considered, because I used to listen to them a lot when I was a kid. The In Name and Blood album with like the organ so and the good. Darkness. Yeah. And start to finish, it's flawless. And that could be a part of that. Actually is almost definitely a part of it. It's weird to think about some of the influences too. Like recently I put on the Acid Bath When the Kite String Pops LP, or Pagan Terrorism Tactics. I don't remember which one it is. Mm-hmm. I put it on for the first time in years, and I was like, I didn't realize how much this guy's writing kind of bled into my own. Things that you listen to when you're a kid, like Nine Inch Nails, also kind of had an influence on things like that.
Oh, but I can see that even now that you're saying that.
Right?
Yeah. It's, like a little bit of the mix. Like, yeah, okay.
Just the way the lyrics are approached and things like that, too, and the imagery. But as far as like punk, obvious punk stuff, like Rudimentary Peni is one of my favorite bands of all time. That's the Nick Blanco artist that I was talking about before. And not that I would like compare us like sonically to them, but he was a big inspiration on my writing and like how I approach the vocals.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I don't know them, but that I'm going to go home and listen to all these now.
Rudimentary Peni. They have actually, you would probably really enjoy this one. As they went, they got like weirder and weirder and weirder. And, Nick Blanco ended up recording an album called Pope Adrian the 37th Psychristiatric, which he was hospitalized. He believed he was Pope Adrian the 37th. I don't believe is a real pope at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And after that, he came out and he recorded this album Cacophony, which is... as an album, it's probably one of my favorite albums of all time, but song for song, it's almost unlistenable.
Oh,
it's
interesting.
So bizarre. It's a lot of it is they recorded almost all of it in one take, and it's really strange, like Lovecraft inspired sort of music. And the earlier stuff is more like mindless thrashing punk stuff, and not that it's like mindless, but you know what I mean. Then he gets into the weird fixation with H.P. Lovecraft, his interest in religious imagery and things like that was always there more or less, but ended up in some delusions and some other songwriting. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, it's okay. It makes me think of, because I wanted to bring this back, but because we were talking about it earlier, but explain it to me again, the cadaver... Oh, the Cyanide
or Synod.
Synod.
Yeah.
Now that's one of the last songs on the record, which is about the Trump impeachment, right? Or
yes, yeah,
yeah. But what? Explain that imagery to me again.
Okay, so the Cadaver Synod was in, I believe it was like the 14th or 15th century. I forget which country. Some European, I would imagine. Maybe in the UK, I don't know. They exhumed. If it's a pope, it had to be in Rome then, or the Vatican City.
Okay, I guess.
Anyway, they exhumed a pope who had been dead for some time, and they put him on trial. I don't remember what specifically the charges were or why.
Yeah,
it sounded like it was a weird petty political move, I guess. But I mean, petty enough to dig his corpse up and put it on the stand.
And have a trial with the dead body.
Yeah.
That is wild.
At the end of the trial, of course, he was found guilty. He wasn't very compelling. He didn't put up a compelling argument. They stripped him of his papacy and they just threw him in the river.
That is so amazing. Now, see, that's the thing, that ability to reflex that kind of knowledge. Like that, and that goes along with the imagery that makes it also fascinating, the project. But like that, something like that, where did you Did you read that, or like, where does that come from? Because you have all these other interests that you like work in.
It's that one. I definitely, I don't remember what it was. It was like some, like just quick blurb of an article. Like, hey, have you heard of this fucking weird thing? And it's like, no, but I want to know about it. And I ended up going down, you know, reading through anything I could find about it for a little while, because I was like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah.
This is so bizarre. And I was like, I'm gonna use this for something. I don't know yet.
Yeah. And then the not Masonic, but the alchemy symbols. I mean, that is that obviously another interest in terms of like the occult and all those things play into
the imagery. It's more of like a superficial interest in the occult, I guess. Like, I'm not like a particularly spiritual person.
Right.
So I wouldn't, you know, some people are very serious about that kind of thing. And
yeah,
I just find it fascinating. I'm really interested by it. And alchemy was like that was a big thing that stuck out to me when working on the record, where I was like, there's a balance to be found here between, you know, the sides, in the as above, so below, Sabbatic goat planting is that's reflected on the LP cover as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I started working it more into some of the songs, where I was reflecting themes between sides A and B. Like I told you about earlier, the Crown of Thorns image being used in one of the songs, like kind of a self-deprecating thing, and then used as somebody who wanted to see himself as a martyr on the cadaver scented thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of bouncing back and forth as like, as you know, you hating other people what you hate in yourself sort of thing. And that was a little self-referential, you know. Bed of Nails was about the idea of religious trauma as a child, where you're put up to an impossible standard by this being who will just torture you for an eternity if you don't live up to it.
Right.
And also feeling like in my life I was being held to an impossible standard at that point too.
Mm-hmm.
But then also realizing later that was kind of like I was wallowing a little bit there, wasn't I? And then, you know, using that as an image in the cadaver synod as well.
Hmm. It's fascinating. Sounds like we have a similar interest in, like, I love occult things and studying alchemy, but not in a, like, I love, like I think you said earlier, like, you love religion as the stories of it.
Yeah.
Right. I love the stories of the occult. I don't really like practice. Like my sister, you know, is like, she considers herself like a witch.
Okay.
You
know? Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't go that far.
Yeah.
But I love reading about it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And the idea of just alternate trains of thought, right? Like it's just so, there's all these avenues and usually they do connect somehow.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, it's all very interesting to me. Like, you know, the same with like UFO stuff.
Right.
I love just reading about it.
Yeah.
I'm not like crazy about it, but it's fascinating.
Cryptids and things like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the whole world.
I actually have a book that you would probably enjoy. I haven't started it yet because it seems a little academic almost, but it's Occult Features of Anarchism.
Oh, interesting.
I'll have to show you that after.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't even started digging into it yet.
Oh. But we can start wrapping it up. But I guess we could talk about it. Like what, so I think part of this came out because like, I don't know if you had texted me or something about the complicated shirts, or you were at No Fun and you saw a video or something.
Oh, it was they did Valentine's Week at No Fun.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah, Valentine's Week.
And it was too little, too late. I mean, I didn't even know I was going out to the night until I got there. But yeah, they had like footage of bands playing at Valentine's.
Oh, that's so
I was
funny.
Like, oh, I gotta text Justin about this.
Yeah. But what's the scene now? Like, what's the, because, you know, you are obviously performing a lot. And like, so what is, What's the current state of the local music scene? Because I'm out of it.
It's really good right now, actually. For the first time in a while, I feel like. There's my only issue with it is that it seems like things are a little fractured. Like people are kind of in their own cliques, which is I do the same thing.
Right.
You stick to the, you know, your own group more or less. It happens, but I wish there was a little more crossover because there's a lot of small, like, different booking collectives and things like that, that like kind of chum around and then like, they don't really cross streams with other aspects of the scene and things like that. But in general, it's going very well. There's shows all the time now, for the first time since, I don't know, like, I feel like it was almost 10 years where things were dried up and there's a renewed interest by like kids, which is awesome. There are kids playing shit now and it's like about time, you know?
Right.
We're supposed to be the ones enjoying the show now.
Right. So where do you, like, where's the main places? Like No Fun, I feel like is a place.
El Dorado.
I don't even know where that is.
That's on 4th Street in Troy.
Oh, cool.
That place is great. Yeah, Eric ended up checking it out and he was like, I'm going to start doing shows here. And it's been great since then. There's also Fusebox still does stuff now.
It still does. Okay.
There's a lot of basements again.
Okay.
I'm glad to hear because Albany was always renowned for its basement scene.
Yeah, I was just trying to think. Like, I felt like the last time... Like, just as you're talking, I'm like, the last time I was at, like, a really, like, fun show, I think I was in a basement in Albany.
There was a great basement scene for a long time.
Yeah, and that was probably, like, 15 years ago.
That sounds right. That's when there was a lot.
20, maybe? Yeah. But I was like, oh, yeah, it's a cool basement. But, okay. Well, that's good to hear. But when's the next record coming out?
You
just sent me some new stuff.
We haven't found a label to put it out yet.
Mm.
And our drummer usually does the label stuff, but he just put out the LP. So it's like, that's financially not a thing he could swing. I get it. It makes sense. Because I can't fucking do it. We're shopping it around. Hopefully going to find somebody else that would be interested in at least like splitting it or something like that. But this year, I would say, because it is well recorded, as you've heard.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Thanks. Yeah, that's another one that's some of the darker songs on there, some of the darkest shit I've done, but it was very cathartic at least.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Feel like I went off on a lot of tangents.
No, it's fine. How do you feel now?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Good
thank
question
you, God.
Mark.
Yeah. Big question mark.
Okay. Here is the outro. As always, thank you for listening. And if you like it, please hit subscribe or share it with a friend. And, you know, there's probably something else I should say here, but just as always, I appreciate you listening, and take care, everyone.